Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C-Squared. Now, on our podcast, we interview musicians and other industry professionals to give you an inside look on how to take your music to the next level.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the C-Squared Podcast. This is your host, Curtis, with my co-host, Aaliyah. And we are here once again with Baby James Delbridge of the band Lycanthro. And he is here to talk to us about being a power metal vocalist, a member of a band, promotion, a bunch of other things that we're going to go dive deep into. And we might even talk about poutine or something if Aaliyah decides to throw in a goofy question near the end or something. So to start, thank you very much, James, for braving us once again.
Oh, shucks, guys. Well, once again, thanks very much for having me as usual. It's always a pleasure to be here on the C-Squared podcast and everything. And on my fourth time, I think I've been on here, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So always a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me again, guys.
You're very welcome. So to start off, we're going to have Aaliyah take over the questions because this is Aaliyah's specialty.
Yeah. So, we've had you on a couple times before, not with me. So it's a pleasure to finally have the opportunity to barrage you with questions myself. People, I know a couple of the episodes, two of the episodes that you were on before were episode 76 in June, and then on a CGI episode in July, if people want to look those up and listen to those. But for the people who haven't listened to those episodes yet, could you please give a brief summary of who you are and what you do in the realms of metal?
Absolutely. So my name is James Delbridge. I'm the lead vocalist and one of the guitar players for the Canadian heavy power metal band Lycanthro. We're based out of Ottawa, Ontario. And we've been around since 2016, 2017-ish. And finally just released our first album this past year. And we at least since we're getting a little bit out of the pandemic now, there's more stuff. Things are happening again for us. And it's not just a giant rut like it was for a while. So, yeah.
Excellent.
I have a follow-up question that's really goofy.
Oh, gosh, go ahead.
So, anybody ever called you guys Lycanthro by mistake?
Oh, boy. So... So when we were doing the promotion for Mark of the Wolf, I actually had some of the interviews that I did. I've heard about six or seven different pronunciations of what it could be. So there's like the ones I've heard is that there's like the proper way, which is Lycanthro. Then there's Lycanthro, which, you know, that's, you know, honest, that's a lot of people say that doesn't matter. Then I've also heard Lycanthro, whenever, then there's the Quebecers who always say it with like a French accent, like Lycanthro. Yeah. And I've heard someone say Lycanthro. And so, yeah, I've heard many different pronunciations of it. So
no one's ever said lick.
No, actually you're the first one.
Damn it. I was trying to get something funny here, but that wasn't a very good question then, I guess. But anyways,
it seems like a good one. And that's kind of surprising, some of those, but yeah, interesting. A good question to start things off with. So I've been following you on social media and I saw that you just recorded a music video recently. And you worked with Dark Moon Productions on this one. Have you worked with them before?
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, Dark Moon Productions is a kind of two-person production company here in Ottawa. They're based in Ottawa, but they do videos for like lots of different bands. And it's our good friend Joe Lyko and his partner Lisa Thompson. They're both from a symphonic metal band from around here called Sovereign Council, who we've played with many times before. And that's kind of their thing that they do outside of their regular day jobs is that they film, they're the music video guys, you know, like whenever someone around here wants a music video done that's affordable, then we go to them because their prices are usually like a lot better than a lot of like the people in like Toronto and stuff like that, like the real professional people, because Joe has like all the top of the line like equipment for this kind of thing, and they, and it seems like they are really taking off around here, because a lot of bands, because they originally started in Ottawa, and are very, we were actually, not this video, but the one we did like 4 years ago or so, for when we did our original EP when we first came out, we were one of the very first videos they ever did. And it looks hilarious now because his production value has gotten so much better. But yeah, no, there's been bands from all over who have hired them now, like, because the production is so good for like, for how much he costs. Like he's worked with, like, at least around here, like Lutharo and Operus and all these other bands that aren't from here, but, you know, they hear about him and then, you know, they're like, oh, this guy's videos look great. So he's a very obvious choice for all of us, because he's also a good friend of the band too. Yeah, it's all, you're always going to get a good product with him.
That sounds like you found the right person to work with. And that's always like such a blessing. And just like, it's all, well, I won't go into my own experience, but what was it like working with them? Reshooting.
So, like, do you mean like the production of the video itself, or working with this company individually? Okay, because
the production itself. Like, what was the filming like?
Okay, so the filming itself. Okay, this is a bit funny, because one of the things that's thing is, this video was postponed so many times, not even just because of COVID, but it was just because I always like to say this video from the planning stages very much was like Spinal Tap, where everything that could have went wrong, because the whole idea originally for the video was we wanted to have this sort of big production-y kind of video. We found this spot near where I live here in Ottawa that's like was like an old town from like the 1800s or something like that. It's like a historical site or whatever, and we wanted to do like a full-on like a witch burning. Like, we were gonna have like full-on like townspeople with torches and stuff like that, and we were gonna have a girl tied to like some post or whatever, and they were gonna set her on fire. The whole point of the video was is that she breaks free and uses her witch powers and she kills everybody, which is still what happens in the video itself. But we had to sort of work around the limitations, because originally we were going to do this outdoors, but literally everywhere we tried, they didn't want to have any part of it, unfortunately. Like, the original place we found was on the City of Ottawa property, which, those of you who aren't from Ottawa, they are the least fun people in the world. If you want to have any kind of fun, they're against it. So... If you want to do anything that involves them, they're going to make you jump through so many hoops. So we eventually just said, screw this, you know, it's not worth it to deal with them, because, like, for example, we weren't going to have a lot of fire in the video. We just wanted to have a little bit, but even they made a huge deal about that. Like, oh, you have to spend an extra $1,000 on fire safety equipment that we're only ever going to use once or whatever and stuff like that. So I was just like, yeah, no, it's not worth it. And then I tried finding private places, like people that I knew who maybe their family owned a ranch or a farm or whatever. And this, again, this is around summer of this year, so there were still the COVID restrictions around, at least in Canada. And nobody wanted any part of it. None of these people wanted us on their property. So, which, you know, it's their property. They can do what they want. But so... eventually, we were originally just getting really ready to give up almost, but Joe, he posted some photos from the video he shot with Operus, and I asked him, hey, that place looks really great. Where is it? And it was indoors. It was like, and he says, oh, it's this place called Light is Art. It's on the other side of town. It's on some ranch in some, like, it's in like this warehouse on like some ranch somewhere. And they made it like a mini soundstage in there for like filming and stuff like that. Not just music videos, but anything like movies, TV shows, whatever. And Joe's using this place a lot for a lot of his videos. And I kind of had to come up with the simple kind of idea of, okay, let's see how we can recreate this idea but make it very heavily dramatized, like kind of like a stage play almost. So we have the shot of the band where it's the, I wanted it to kind of be like, I'm like, well, if we have this space, I want it to be sort of like those old 80s videos where each band member's on their own podium or something like that. So we did that. And for the cinematic thing, we heavily dramatized it. Instead of making a post that our witch would be tied to, we went to the day of, I went to Canadian Tire and bought a rope, which they tied into a noose. And we hung it over the lights. And we had our guy who was playing the preacher, who he was like a, you won't hear him talk in the video, obviously, but he was acting very much like a televangelist, and it was hilarious. And the way that they shot it, because in terms of extras, we didn't have a lot of people. So the way we shot it was the extras, we were all silhouetted. And since this place was on a ranch, we found like a bunch of shovels and pitchforks, whatever, we were waving them around. So it almost kind of looks like a black and white film when you look at it. So overall, it's... obviously it didn't go as according to plan originally, but we made the best with what we had. And I think that is, you know, I find that that's just as good, if not better, than everything going according to plan, is having all these hurdles, but still being able to make it happen. That's almost an achievement in and of itself.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like that's a pretty common experience, honestly. Because we had the same experience with our music video, where everything that could have gone wrong seemed to go wrong. And, you know, and I think a lot of other bands have that experience as well. So I think that's a good lesson, you know, that's going to happen. Just expect everything to go wrong and be ready to roll with it regardless.
Yeah. And one lesson I learned is that a lot of these places who they like, you know, a lot of these filming locations, they don't seem to like metal bands for some reason. Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, they think they're going to destroy everything, but...
Yeah, they think
we're actually, all... When it came to booking our location, I didn't even tell them we were metal. I was like... they asked what genre we were. I was like, well, we like symphonic rock.
I mean... You know. We're like Evanescence or something. No, yeah. They all think that we're like going to be like black metal bands who were going to like burn a goat on their property or something.
Right. Just make yourself sound way more tame than you are.
Yeah. So. I've actually had to do that before for other things, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, you're not lying.
Just stretching the truth, you know, just.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't encourage people to do it to a great extent, but prejudice is based on genre. I like, come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Curtis, do you have a follow-up? You're gesturing, and I don't know if that means that you have a question.
I did, but I realized it doesn't really, whoops. I had a phone call come in right when we were doing that. I did, but it actually is covered later, so I'm going to wait.
Okay. Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. How many hours a day were you filming, by the way?
It was around 8 hours, I think. We only filmed the one day. We only had the one day, and it took about, it was around eight-ish hours to do it. Like, I think the first half was just the band stuff, and I felt really bad for the rest of my guys, because we had to, because originally we were going to do the video in the afternoon, but I always like to joke this is an Ottawa thing, but I know it's not. It's because, you know, we're a government town and everybody has, you know, quote unquote real jobs here. So some of our guys had to leave early, like right after we shot the band stuff, because they couldn't get out of work that day. Mm-hmm. So I feel bad that they weren't able to experience the rest of it, because the first half of the day was just all the band shots. And then the second half of the day was the cinematic stuff. With the extras and stuff like that. So in total, it was around like 8-ish hours.
Wow, not long at all.
Mm.
We've already gone over some, but in your opinion, what do you think are some things people should keep in mind about filming music videos?
Always plan for the worst, as you said before, because as I said, the thing with music videos is that, like, you're almost sort of treating it as, like, it's not like you're booking a show where you're playing a show or whatever. You're almost treating it as it's unfortunate because even though we're musicians, none of us are filmmakers unless someone went to film school or whatever. But so we're, you almost have to like treat it the way you talk to people. If there's a certain location you want or a certain thing you want, prop, whatever, you almost have to try and your best to get into the filmmaker mindset and talk to people like that. Because as we mentioned before, a lot of people I found, again, I don't know how true this is in places. Maybe it's a regional thing. I don't know. But a lot of these film people are very, very prejudiced against certain genres. And whenever you tell them you want to do something, 9 times out of 10, they probably won't like the idea because for whatever reason, because because of that preconceived bias towards that particular genre. Because as you said, Aaliyah, even if you say rock, a lot of them will be like, I don't want to do that, you know? So I find the best thing to do is just kind of do your research on where you want to go. And when you find the place you want to shoot, find like 5 other places that are similar. You know, you have to try and find as many places and as many kinds of people as you can, because music videos I found are such a different beast than anything else that we do as musicians, because you almost have to treat it like we're not musicians now at this point, we're actors now, you know. You almost got to treat it like that, because if you try and go into it with the mindset of how you would network as a musician, that doesn't jive with a lot of the people who do film. That's what I found, at least. So yeah. Or maybe not necessarily people who do film, but it also doesn't jive with, you know, property owners and stuff like that. Because a lot of them, I think that's what I should be saying, is property owners, because a lot of them aren't smart to our business. So a lot of them are all like, you know, unless you're like playing like country pop or something, they're probably not going to be into it. So yeah, so I think it's just do your research and try and find multiple places that you think would be good, because eventually you'll find somewhere that'll be willing to have you, but it does take time. So unfortunately, so.
Yeah, those are good tips. Let's move on to talking about Mark of the Wolf. You just released your album in June, and I wanted to just ask how the reception has been after the album release.
So the album itself, like when it came out, the reception was really good. As I said before on here, it was really great to see that kind of, that people were recognizing all the work we put into it. Cause we hadn't released anything for like 3 years before that due to like pandemic and members leaving and all the usual stuff. But to be completely honest, one of the things that has been very kind of troubling to me ever since the album came out was that, like, the thing with the post promotion for it is that, again, due to circumstances that are kind of out of our control, we weren't able to have a lot of it, because this music video I wanted originally to come out during the album cycle, but because of certain things that couldn't happen, and so there wasn't really much of post promotion, which I wish there was. I really wanted there to be, but it was a combination of everything I had planned that I wanted to do for post promotion. None of it happened, again, because, you know, pandemic and other things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was also just a feeling of just being really burnt out as well. Like, I remember after the album came out, it was like, I felt like, I remember like I didn't do anything for like a month, and I still kind of, I was just kind of struggling with, you know, just burnout and stuff like that, you know? So like, it's one of these things where I feel like, you know, in the future, there has to be a bit more of a like set in stone plan for stuff like that, and contingency plans for if things go wrong, because like this whole album, even though the album itself did really well in terms of like sales, and we got a lot of good streams on Spotify and stuff like that. But it's one of these things where I'm always of the mind that we could do better. And this was a really good learning experience for when we have our next thing we're going to release. We know all this stuff could potentially happen, so we'll prepare for it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a really important lesson. And it's true, you know, musicians, we pour so much into an album release. It's really hard to do stuff afterwards. What do you think, what would be a takeaway other than just planning, like maybe preparing stuff, preparing content in advance before the album release while you're still in that pushing mode so that you don't have to do as much after might be helpful. I don't know. What do you think?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It was mainly just because like, that's one of the things I'm constantly thinking about now is that like, it's really just comes down to like content that you put out afterwards to keep yourself, you know, fresh in people's minds. Cause that's something that it can be difficult, but you got to have something. Like I already, like speaking for us, we already have, I already have planned for next year just to keep things going. We have the music video coming out in around January-ish. Excuse me. Like January, mid-January-ish, I think. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a cover song that we recorded a while back. Well, that'll come out in March-ish as like a single. And then we'll hopefully have, and then around February, March is when we are going to go record the next release, and then that will hopefully be ready by like that and all of the content that goes with it. That will be ready by like the summer, like for like the album cycle could be like from it's not an album, it'll be more of like an EP, but it'll be like released in like aiming for like August-ish, June, July, August, and we would have our promo cycle before that. And so, yeah, I've found that planning more meticulously has been a very big help for this kind of thing, for sure.
Yeah, do you use like a paper planner or do you use digital?
Oh, what do you mean?
I feel like I do better writing things down physically.
Oh! I misheard you. I thought you said a paper player and I'm like, what's that? a planner. Yeah. No, I just write a Word document. Like what I've been doing is for the next release, whenever I know a price of a certain thing or whatever, I'll update I have a Word document that'll be like, you know, next release budget or whatever. And I'll be like, okay, this what we want is going to cost this much, this one wants going to cost this much, blah 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 blah, because since we learned so much from this cycle, and again, you know, it's always been like everybody, it's been hindered because of, you know, pandemic times, but since next year seems to be looking brighter, we're going to as Richard Attenborough famously says in Jurassic Park, we're going to spare no expense for our next thing. We want to do it right. So we want to have everything ready beforehand and we want to have all of our ideas come to fruition. And so, yeah, I've just been planning meticulously now to make that happen.
That sounds exciting. You have something also exciting coming up very soon. And I'm not sure when this episode is going to be posted, but you're opening for Unleash the Archers on the 19th. How have you been preparing for live performance? Did I just say performance?
Performance.
How have you been preparing for live performance throughout the pandemic?
Yeah, see, again, that's another really interesting thing too, because as I said, this goes back to, I think this might be the whole theme of the episode, but this goes back to the whole, you know, making things work even through adversity, because this show it was a surprise, because what happened was our local promoter, who's the one who gets all like the quote unquote, the big bands. I saw her like for the first time in like 2 years at like a bar. It was like a friend, mutual friends, like birthday party or something. And I originally had told her that, oh, we're going to do an album release party, the one that we never got to do. We're going to do that. And she's like, oh, well, you could do that, but I have a better idea for you. I'm like, what's that? She's like, how would you like to play with Unleash the Archers? I'm like, and then my jaw just hit the floor. I'm like, And so, what I mean by kind of doing things despite adversity is because Our drummer is still not in the country. He's stuck in another country. So we've so we've had to, you know, have a, like, get a good fill in for it and, mm-hmm. and obviously practice our asses off. Cause it's our first, obviously it's our first show in 2 years. So it's, and it's funny. Cause the thing I always joke about, it's like, oh, it's our first show back and we're playing with Unleash the Archers, you know, no pressure. So yeah, no. So I think we're going to be fine. I have the utmost faith in all my new guys because they're all fantastic players. And I think it's going to go really well, but yeah, it's been a very interesting time for planning and getting ready for the show, just because, you know, we used to be so used to it, you know, because we used to play all the time and not even just here, just like we used to go and try and play out of town and tour around, at least tour around as much as as much as we could. But mm-hmm. and it used to just come naturally to us. It's like, oh, we have another show, okay, great, you know. And then, but now it's just like, okay, we haven't done this in a while, what do we do again?
We prepared for everything to go wrong, not according to plan.
Yeah, absolutely
right. Because that's the theme of the episode.
I want to ask you quick, James, what are the guidelines right now in Ontario for concerts? I don't even know anymore. Is it, do you got to be seated or what, do you know?
Here's the thing.
It was that long ago.
It was, but from what I've been hearing, this show is going to be like full on back to normal. The show, it's in a 450 person venue and it's pretty much sold out. There's like less than 20 tickets left in like a 450 person.
So there's no guidelines now. Okay.
No. Here's the thing. Cause what happened was, is that, cause I've been to a few local shows here, just of some friends bands. And the only thing that seems to be the only guideline that seems to still be there is that if you still have to wear your mask, if you don't have a drink in your hand. Yeah. But other than that, standing, no distancing, nothing. And the thing with that is, and one thing that was kind of a bit of a relief to us the other day was the local promoter here. Her name's Christina Casper from Chord Productions, by the way. She messaged me saying that she's like, oh, we just dodged a bullet today. Like, what do you mean? And she goes, oh, today, apparently Doug Ford was supposed to announce whether he was going to be rolling back numbers for gatherings and events again. And he said, no. So we're still good for shows and stuff like that. Now we had a little bit of a scare because now it's a city to city sort of thing. Now they're letting the cities decide that, like Kingston just banned live music for like a week and a half. And everyone was messaging me like, oh, is this happening in Ottawa? And I'm just like, no, if it was going to happen here, they would have said something by now. So it's just because Kingston in and of itself is that's where a lot of the healthcare people live, at least in Ontario. So I can see why that would be a thing there, but thankfully this thing's going to be going completely 100% full capacity. It's going to be like old times again, you know,
just with masks.
Yeah. But again, I've always said that, like, I'm not a big fan of the masks either, but I'd always say I'd rather play to a place that's sold out with people wearing masks than play to a place with like 20 people seated, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. No, I can see that viewpoint. More people. Yeah, no, I get it. Cool. That was all I had, Aaliyah. I'll be quiet for a few more minutes.
Well, is there anything else you wanted to share about preparing for the live show? Before I move on to the next topic.
Yes, actually. So this isn't completely confirmed yet, but one thing that is pretty exciting that's been happening with us is that we've been in talks with somebody and we might actually have a fifth member soon. We might have a keyboard player in the band.
It's Aaliyah.
That would be quite the commute.
It's actually funny because the person who we might have as our keyboard player lives farther away from us than you do.
No way.
Yeah, because I won't say who it is, but because it's not completely confirmed yet. But I have a good friend of mine who lives in Florida, he's a fantastic keyboard player. And he's someone that, because one thing I've seen with a lot of bands, especially in the States, like as you've seen, Aaliyah, like Seven Spires and all that. So all of them live apart, you know, all of them live in different states and stuff like that. So I kind of thought, like, you know, if we can find the right person, why not do that with at least with just one member of ours? Because so this particular person, we told them, hey, I just want to extend the invitation to you. This is up to you. Like, this is up to you. If you think you can make it happen, great. If not, there's no hard feelings. But yeah, it seems that he thinks he can make it work. And he would kind of do the typical band member who lives away from here thing, where whenever we have something to film or release or whatever, he would, because he's traveled for music before. So he would come up here and we'd film all, do all the photos, do all the videos, do everything here. And he'd come up here if we had like a really big show or if we were doing a tour or whatever. So he'd pretty much be like a part-time-ish member. Like, he'd still be a member, but it'd be like, you know, for obvious reasons, he wouldn't be at every practice. He wouldn't be at every recording session. He wouldn't be at everything. He'd probably record his parts there, you know? So we kind of figured like to try it to see if it'll work. And so far it seems like it is. So.
I'm muted. That's awesome. Yeah, it's cool how we're becoming more able to connect with musicians across the globe and like just collaborate with people that we never would have before. I think it's the pandemic has opened up a lot of people's minds about that. So it's good Absolutely. To hear. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
I have a quick question though, James, just in regards to the keyboard player. If we guess it, are you going to say?
No, because as I said, it's not confirmed yet. If it was, then sure, but it's not like set in stone yet. We're still kind of, he seems very interested in it, but we're still doing the whole like, oh, I send you some of my tracks, write something over it just to see what your style is and how you play and stuff like that. So we're still in the pseudo audition stage pretty much. Like, I already know he's a good player, but I just want to see how he does with our songs. So
I just have a quick question. Have I talked to this person before?
Yes, you have.
I thought so. That's why I was.
Yeah, I think you already know who I'm talking about.
Dude, but I'm not going to say. I was just curious if it was the individual I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll tell you later, Aaliyah, maybe if James lets me.
Yeah, when we're done recording, I'll tell you. Because I think this is someone you know, actually, too. So.
Oh, cool.
I think you do. So we'll see. We'll see.
It's all Josh right. Silver from Typo Negative, right?
Oh yes, yes. It's actually it's Jens Johansson from Stradivarius.
Perfect. Better.
Brilliant. Still better.
I wish.
What question are we even on now? I totally derailed this. I'm
We're
sorry.
On the final topic.
Oh, all right.
Mm-hmm. Of the Instagram live streams.
All right.
Yes, the Wolf Pack. I wanted to ask, how do you prepare for your live streams?
So pretty much what I do is, obviously, as you know, because you both have been on it, it's pretty chill. Like, it's very much sort of like a conversation instead of an interview. Usually what I do to prepare is I'll write down like a couple of questions that I will have for them, but I kind of don't really ask them in an interviewish kind of sense. I kind of just bring it up like in a conversation, see where that goes and weaves and stuff like that, and kind of just, you know, go wherever the conversation takes us. Like, just for an example, the very last stream I did of the year was with I wanted to get at least one person from that tour on my show for the Unleash the Archers thing, since we're playing with them. And I got Jake from Aether Realm. He was the last guest I had. And he is the first guest I ever had where I probably had about 6 or 7 questions written down for him. I didn't get to one of them because me and him had such a good time just shooting the shit about random stuff. And he was asking me a lot of stuff, which I was not expecting. Like, he was like doing his laundry while we were streaming and stuff like that. And we all thought it was hilarious. And he was just, you know, cracking jokes everywhere. So it's, and I just thought, you know what, like, even like, if this is what it's going to be like, and the chat was loving it, like the chat was like really loving everything that was going on, and we were like getting polls going with them and stuff like that. So I thought, you know what, this is, if I don't get to any of my questions, but if the people are enjoying this, then so be it, you know? So that's pretty much, like, in terms of getting ready for these, that's pretty much all it is. Just have a few questions for them, have a few topics that I want to, it's usually something I want to learn from them about, whatever it mm-hmm. is. And just see where it goes from there.
Do you ever have trouble, like, getting the conversation started?
Yeah.
Or has it always gone pretty well?
99% of the time, it goes really well. But there are the odd guests that I have had. And this is, I'm not saying this is, like, a bad thing towards them. It's just a lot of them were kind of, some of them were kind of shy. I felt like one thing that I absolutely hate with these things is when I feel like I'm doing most of the talking. So there are some guests who I had who I remember I'd be like, well, I've gone through all the questions I have and it's only been half an hour. We have another half an hour left. Shit. Mm-hmm. So I've had that before, but I think I'm pretty decent, like, kind of coming stuff up with stuff on the fly. And I'll usually, when in doubt, I just go to the chat. Like, I'll just be like, okay, questions, let me, like, put them down there right now. And usually that helps. Like, yeah. there's some people who I've had, again, I won't mention any names, but, like, there's some people who I've had on the show who didn't really seem like they were that great at interviews or me. This kind of thing.
You're talking about me.
No, Curtis was actually, yours was very good. Yours is very good.
You're calling me out.
But I think one thing that I think that is that I try and do with some of these guests that are like this is just try and find some way to break them out of the awkwardness, whether it be like through like jokes or the people in the chat or whatever. Like, that's one of the things, like, I've had some relatively big names on my show that weren't very talkative and weren't very, you know, they seemed pretty shy. And I'm thinking, man, but you've done all this stuff. How are you shy? You know? But a lot of the times, hell, even like the chat is very much, the people in the chat are very much like helping them out. They're like, oh, we love you, man. We love your stuff, blah, 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 you know? So,
yeah. Yeah. I think sometimes it's, I know I have a hard time talking when I don't know what I'm supposed to be talking about. So, like, but once you give me a topic, then I can latch onto it and then I can go from there. Mm-hmm. But I know you mentioned in a previous episode that you're more of an extrovert.
Yeah.
So that's probably a bonus trait for doing those types of live streams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that's one of the things that I find pretty funny about it. Which, as I said, just over time with, you know, the album promotion and everything, I started doing like two streams a week instead of three because I just didn't have the mental energy to, because, you know, getting a lot of these guests are hard because they all have their own schedules and stuff like that. So you have to try and like fit them all in certain place while still adhering to your schedule. But towards the beginning, I think that, like, it was mainly just because I just really liked doing it. And towards the beginning, I was having three guests a week. And I remember one of the very first guests I had was Andy Dowling from Lord. And one of the things he said to me, he's like, mate, how the fuck are you able to get do three people in a week? I do one podcast a week and I'm exhausted after that. And I'm just like, oh, well, these are all people that I like who I want to get to meet. Either I want to, you know, catch up with them because they're people I know, or they're people who I genuinely care about their art and I want to learn from them, you know? So that's just how it is. But it has gotten, I know what he means now. It has gotten a bit exhausting doing it this long. So that's why I'm taking a break until February-ish. And then I'm going to start them up again. I already have some people who I've talked to come on again for quote unquote season three. So yeah, it's gonna be it's going to be good. I'm excited to see who, for people to see who we have for it.
Awesome. I can't wait to see who you have for it. Curtis, did you have a question? I saw you raise your hand.
For a second, because I do five a week and I've been doing five a week for like 3 years. I want to just like stop that and just be like, dude, I do five a week and I've been doing them for like 2-3 years that way. So
this guy goes hardcore, man.
Yeah, it sure does.
Just say it. Say it. And you're like, what, 21, 19, 15, something like that?
Yeah, I'm two years old. And fuck's sakes.
Dave, well, at least once during an interview, I always have to do that to you. But it is tough doing that amount. Most people can't do it. I don't know how I've been doing it for a while.
But before you keep going, Aaliyah, I was about to say, you should have seen him and Corey during Corey's stream on Twitch the other day.
I think I was only in there for a brief second to like send some birthday wishes, and then I had to drive home from work. So it's like right in the middle of my commute home from my day job.
Oh no, this was the New Flesh stream last Friday, and I popped in because I wasn't doing anything, and I'm, as soon as I pop in, I just immediately get the freaking baby jokes from both of them, and them just being as embarrassing as possible.
but she did plug Lecanthro.
Yeah, she did. So yeah, I very much appreciate that.
So you got embarrassed, but we did link to your band. We didn't say the band sucks. We said the band was great and all the rest of it. So,
well, I mean, that is why I love you guys.
We make fun of you, but we do say Lecanthro is great. We push people over to it. So.
I mean, no, but someone's not really your friend until they can make fun of you, right?
Yeah,
exactly. That's the whole thing. What else do we got on the live streams, Aaliyah? Because I got one more question for James once you're done.
Those were all kind of unplanned questions about the live stream. I think I've got a lot of good information about those. So you can move on to your question if you'd like, Curtis.
So, got two questions, actually. So number one, so what is your favorite of all time comedy werewolf movie?
Comedy werewolf movie? Oh.
Not allowed to say an American Werewolf in London. Well, I mean, I guess that one's kind of...
Damn it! I'm not allowed to say that. All right.
Yeah, don't use. Obviously, it's going to be Teen Wolf, but I mean, if it's not Teen Wolf, tell me what else.
It's not actually, because the only one I can think of, and this is not really a comedy. It's like almost half, because it's like the first half is more comedy, then the second half gets more serious. As I always say, Ginger Snaps.
Yeah. Okay.
Ginger Snaps. I'd probably have to say for that, because there are bits in it that are funny, but like, I'm not really a big fan of the whole werewolf like comedy thing. I kind of just like when it's a horror film, more of it. But like, I find that Ginger Snaps is like that happy medium of, oh, it's still a serious sort of werewolf movie, and this, you know, chick is freaking going around and killing people and stuff like that. But the first half is pretty much like your typical like early 2000s high school raunchy comedy, pretty much. So,
yeah. No, I get it. And then the final question I have for you is, what is your favorite non-comedy horror werewolf movie? Well, it doesn't have to be horror, but werewolf movie, I guess it would be horror.
This is actually a pretty hilarious thing, because first of all, I'm going to say The Howling. The Howling is probably my favorite one, to the point where that film actually inspired our logo. Because our when we got our years ago when we got our logo done, the guy who designed it's our logo was done by the same guy who did the Agonists logo,
mm-hmm.
and it was like a mutual friend who knew him or whatever, and he said to me, "Hey, send me a bunch of logos, band logos that you like, and I'll try and mishmash them together." And I didn't send him any band logos. I actually sent him horror movie posters. I said, "Hey, I like the font in this. I like the font in this." And one of them I sent was The Howling. And so I said, I want you to make our logo look like it'd be like, what would be the name of a horror movie? Like that kind of thing. Like it'd be like Lycanthro and blah, 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 you know, for on a horror movie poster, like that kind of font. And it turned out very similarly to the font that's on The Howling. So, Howling's probably my favorite non-comedy werewolf film, I think.
Cool. Do we have anything else, Aaliyah?
Do you think silver bullets can kill a werewolf?
Yes. Oh, okay. That's another one. Silver bullets a great one too.
It is a good one.
Silver that bullets is great. Mainly because Gary Busey's in it.
So now I got a final one. So if you
turn, this is like how you name your file names. Final.
Yeah.
So if you turned into a werewolf, would that be a blessing or a curse? James Delbridge, not anybody else. James Delbridge turns into a werewolf. Is it a blessing or is it a curse?
And see, why? It depends. Can I control it?
I mean, isn't part of the point of being a werewolf is you can't control it, or am I?
No, that's a misconception. There are some stories where one part of getting a werewolf powers is that there is some things where you can control it. Like, I just have Skyrim on the mind because I was just playing it recently. And in that you can. So
yeah, no, we're gonna go with the you can't.
Yeah, then I'd say it'd probably be more of a curse then, because like I'd only ever want to do it if I could control it. So if I could be like, cool. If I'm like kind of backed into a corner, if I'm like getting like mugged or something, I could be like, you know. And then
okay fine. What about you, Aaliyah? Would it be a blessing or a curse if Aaliyah
absolutely turned... a curse? It's okay. Clearly a curse, because you'll end up killing people that you love.
What about the people you hate?
Both, but I mean you're gonna get stuck with the guilt either way, so there's nobody I hate enough to kill them. No one.
That's because we're being
except recorded. For you, Curtis.
That was recorded. So, James, final words you would like to say to us before we wrap up this wonderful podcast?
Yes. So, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me on again. It's always a pleasure to be on here and chat with you guys. Go check out Mark of the Wolf if you haven't already. It's on Spotify, Bandcamp, all the places that you'd usually see it. Keep your eye out for our music video. It's going to be out in mid-January-ish. And we have lots of great stuff coming next year. We're going to have a new release next year. And follow us on all the socials. If you're into bands like Manowar and Hammerfall and Blind Guardian, stuff like that, then check us out.
Excellent. So for everyone, I have to say, until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by leaving us a 5-star review on your platform of choice. You can also join the conversation by following us on any social media and suggesting guests or topics you'd like to learn more about. Thanks for listening to C Squared.